Hello, wayward ships. The lamp is lit, the kettle is on, and the lighthouse is beaming quietly across a rain-soaked sea. And maybe the sun's just starting to peek out through the sky. Today's letter isn't about deadlines or deliverables, but it's about not crossing the finish line, submitting on time, or even finishing at all. This weekend, the one that I'm currently in, was the weekend of a local 48-hour film festival, which I normally participate in every year. However, I took a big step back, took a look at my life, and realized that when I do film events on a timeline with that specific structure, I get really stressed. And it's supposed to be a fun thing, and maybe I will return to the practice when I'm a little bit older, have a little bit more disposable income. But I just knew that if I participated this year with where I'm at, I would be really stressed out about it, and it wouldn't be just a fun thing that I make with my friends. So instead, I actively chose not to participate, and earlier I was supposed to be out of town. I guess a couple of months ago I had a plan to be out of town, which changed, so I ended up being here and being available, but I still actively chose not to participate, even though many of my friends did, and I was invited a few times, and I declined politely because I realized it just wasn't going to be good for me. And still, and yet, despite not participating, I was so inspired. I mean, I have the coolest friends, and even people I don't even really know that well. I am so lucky to have a creative community locally where I live and be able to witness them just birth ideas out of seemingly nowhere and lose sleep over it and just chug along and enjoy themselves. And I was so inspired at seeing all my pals do this 48-hour film festival that I guess by proxy absorb some of that creative energy, and I felt the internal rush of creation just without the timer. So part one is the act of creation without output pressure. As an ex productivity output focused girly, this is a big one. On every single resume that I sent for every single internship and job application while I was in university and just after university, I listed a few of my really great attributes, as one does in a resume. One of them, and I argued that this was the best one in my letters, was efficiency. I didn't want to waste time doing things inefficiently because I wanted to increase the output on a short timeline. And I liked making things efficient and adaptable. And while I still advocate for systems to help you do that, if you can automate something, girl, automate it. You know, set a timer for yourself so you don't forget. Set a reminder to remind you, like, technology's here, you can use it, you're allowed, I'm giving you permission. And I just didn't realize that maybe this was not the way that we should be living. And you know what? I'd seen Lord of the Rings, so I probably should have known. And I'd read all those books where it's like capitalism and the invention of industrialization. Like, I was in history class, and yet the big picture of it never really fully hit me. I was so, you know, plugged into the grind that I didn't understand that it really is about the journey. Because at the end of the day, and something I've said before in podcasts, humans, we love anticipation. We just like to be on the edge of anticipation all the time. The hope and the yearning for something is sometimes equal to the joy of actually getting it. And it often lasts longer too. The joy of getting something is not always, it doesn't stay for as long, right? You win the award, you get the thing, you have your laurels, you enjoy that one night, and then how long do you still enjoy it before people forget? And then you kind of realize your enjoyment of it was actually the clout you received, right? Like, oh, I actually really only liked this thing that I won, this award that I think got, this achievement because of the attention that it gave me from my peers who I respect. And once that attention is gone, the award doesn't really mean anything anymore. For example, when at the end of the day, I think the act of creating something, the journey of it, just the fact that you're kind of birthing something into this world that did not exist before in the material plane, you know, it existed in your mind, but not outside of your mind, that's awesome. You know, in that way, we are all mothers. And I think creating for joy, not productivity, no deadlines, no deliverables, no goal in mind, no beginning with the end in mind. That was something that was on like a ruler that I got in high school. Again, high performing high school, which was really great for a lot of things. It makes me a really great business owner. It makes me a really great, efficient entrepreneur. But does it make me a good human? I actually don't think so. I think what makes me a good human, not that you need to win any awards for being a good human, but to have a life well lived, joy. This weekend, I spent some time making music. Oh my gosh. I was recently, I guess gifted, yes, gifted a music setup that's incredible. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it, but all the tools that I wish I had when I was songwriting, I now have. I don't know if you know how much that means to me, but it's huge. It's like giving you all the tools you need to make your dreams come true. And music making, music writing, releasing an album one day, maybe just an EP has been a big, big secret dream of mine forever. And not only my dream, but I've had really great encouragement from other people who have said, Allison, you should create an album. And many people have said, Allison, you should create a podcast. And look where I am now. And I always think, you know what? Like, I've heard stories of filmmakers and successful business people saying, my friend one day said, you know, you'd be really good at this. And so I decided to try it out. And I did it. And here I am. And they're very successful. And usually, you know, white men. I don't know if you could tell by the sound of my voice, for those of you that don't know me personally, but I am not a white man. And so I guess it took me, like, it took me more people telling me that I should do something to actually go and do it, because I didn't believe the first one or the second one or the third one or the fourth one or the fifth one. And I was like, okay, listen, how many people is it going to take you to actually do the thing? And I timing is a really big thing. I'm getting kind of off track here, but I think that were these opportunities presented to me any earlier than now, I would not be able to follow through with them and honor them the way that I'm able to now, because almost everything I do, if I am able, I try to do intentionally. With the time I have left, which is probably quite a lot, let's be real. But honestly, we never know. So kind of exciting. I want to live well and be a good human. And part of that is not denying myself things that could help me human, you know, in the way that I really desire to. So music making, it has long been a tool that I use to help process my emotions. It's an artistic outlet, and I know that sounds kind of cliche, but some of my best music comes out of when I'm really, really sad. And it's a way that I funnel my not so shiny emotions and sometimes my anger or hurt or betrayal in a safe environment where it's away from people I genuinely love and care about, so they don't bear the brunt of my ire and my meanness unnecessarily. And then I also end up with a self-contained product at the end of it. I mean, product's not the right word, but I like a self-contained artistic existence of a thing that I can refer back to, use in my reflections as I grow older, you know, and I might be in a similar situation one day in the future as now, and then I have a piece of music that I can listen to that helps me understand what I was going through the first time, or maybe there's a piece of wisdom in there that I can use, and so I can self-reflect and use it as a sort of musical knowledge base, because sometimes the music tells a story that the words can't. And anyone who's ever, I don't know, listened to a freaking music score, little Hans Zimmer, knows exactly what I'm talking about. Studio Ghibli, like Miyazaki, I mean, any soaring, James, oh my gosh, John Williams, like any main theme from any piece of blockbuster cinematic hit history, like, has a sweeping score. Oh my gosh, the How to Train Your Dragon soundtrack, that's so beautiful, you know, when the music just makes your heart soar. So you know, even if you don't think you know, you probably know. You've probably had a piece of music, a sound, someone's voice just carry you somewhere. So I think it's a universal thing in that way. However, music is just really lovely and is a way that I used to journal and artistically process some feelings that sometimes I don't even understand. I'll just play a few chords, close my eyes, and just sing about something and stream of consciousness and blah. Sometimes what comes out is actually really good and I can work on it and tweak it and create a full song. However, I was never until now able to share it unless I had a full, entirely perfect take. And for those of you that aren't musicians, or maybe that are musicians, you'll understand, like, a full perfect take, like studio perfection, to do all at once by yourself is really hard. To be technically perfect, to not make any mistakes, to be vocally perfect or as good as you can be, and record yourself at home on your phone all the way through in a song that you just wrote, haven't really practiced that much, or even if you have practiced, it's hard. And especially when you're trying to compose stuff, it's extremely challenging, because I'll have a melody line, it'll be really, really good, and I won't record it because I don't want to put that pressure on myself, and then I forget it. And I'm like, oh no, there's no one here to hear it and parrot it back to me. And also, now the song is lost. But it was really good. I remember how it made me feel, and that Maya Angelou quote, people won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel. It's kind of how I feel sometimes about the music that I do, like, for myself to process things. And anyways, I digress. I am the very, very, very lucky and grateful recipient of a essentially full mini music studio in my own house, at least enough to do the things that I want to do. And that's actually probably more than enough. And so very, very grateful to the person who helped make this come together. You know who you are. Hello. Because it's excellent and it's unlocked so much joy. And this is the story of all of that joy. I literally just had a impulse to share a piece of music with my friend Charlie. And she'd come over to just hang out. And I was like, want to see this song that, like, I made? It's so cool. She was like, yeah. And then she was like, wait, why don't we make one together? And then we just started to. And I came up with this funky bass line, as one does, just to show her, like, this is what I learned. This is what you could do with the software. And the best way to learn is by actually teaching. If you've literally ever been to a school where they taught you how to learn properly, you know, like, one of the core tenets was, like, learning more efficiently and better. But one of the best ways to learn stuff is to teach, because it demonstrates your knowledge and also your knowledge gaps and your ability to problem solve based on the knowledge that you do know. So it's like knowledge in motion. It's action on the things you've learned. And so it's a really effective way to actually lock things in, and not just be someone who learns to regurgitate information, which is something I did a lot of when I was younger. It was just like, can I spit out the information? Am I a walking dictionary? Now, with the invention of phones and the internet and everything else, you don't really need to know that much as just an internal knowledge. It's more about problem solving, I would say, and critical thinking skills. However, when I used to learn, I used to just learn to be efficient at learning, which meant that I was just absorbing as much as I possibly could. Whereas now, I realize learning is actually about, are you learning the skill? Can you perform the skill without the textbook in front of you? You know, or at least to the side, and use it as a cheat sheet. And I think that's a really different concept of learning than performative learning or performance-based learning. Just separating it from the idea of productivity has been really, really awesome. Of just, I could learn this and there's no test, but also if I learn this, I can make music with my friend. So he laid down this incredible beat Actually, sorry, this bass line. I'm really bad at beats. I can't keep time to save my life. Everybody knows this. Right down to the strings teacher who I tried to jam with when I was in like the 10th grade. And I was just like, just follow me. I was so overconfident. And he was like, I don't know what time signature you're announcing. And he was trying to drum. He was like, where are you? And I was just like, take the drums away. Let me solo. And it was mostly because I couldn't, and I still can't. I'm really bad at keeping time. My internal drum beat, whatever that sounds like, is erratic. She's a little different. However, melodies, counter melodies, chord progressions kind of are my thing. I can feel it. I can hear it. I can see shroom colors with it. And I cannot keep tempo and time. So I was panicking. And like I turned to Charlie and went, this is not in time. I don't know how to quantize these beats. These are things I'm learning. We don't know what to do. And she went, listen, I'm gonna help you. Step aside. And she looked at the grid pattern. I'm a piano score girl. She looked at the grid pattern in Logic Pro and she just started dragging things. And then she found the drum. Well, I found the drum kit. And then she just went to town on the drum kit. And she literally laid down a beat, like manually. The drum kit is essentially, think of like grid paper. And it's just on the left column is just a bunch of drums. And on the right rows, each row is like a beat of a measure or a beat of a bar. And it's like, it's just a different way of seeing it. And honestly, music is just math. I can't do that kind of math. She can. And so we were able to create and layer so many beautiful things on top of each other. And then we added some melody and I was able to plug in my piano and actually throw in a really awesome melody. It's a very soaring, very, very me. And the look on my friend's face, oh my gosh, when I was playing, she was just so full of wonder. The same wonder I had when she was doing drums. And I was like, this is amazing. We're both wonderful. And that totally changed the vibe of the song. So we went back in and we changed the bass line because it no longer suited this like funky minor key. It was a very cinematic major key with a little bit of a diminished something in there, I think. It was just so awesome. And we ended up playing with a bunch of buttons, which I'd be normally terrified to play with because I don't know. Sometimes you don't want to mess with like a software. It turns out when it's music making, there's always the edit undo button. And also when you're having fun, you're having fun. So we got to learn about a lot of what different things did and buttons did. And if you ever were someone who went to like a science center or an air and space museum as a kid and you just like to push all the buttons, highly recommend getting into audio engineering. It's so fun. It's just dials and stuff. And I get it. It's on like a 2D interface because it's on your computer. But there's buttons to push. There are colors to play with. There are things that are named silly things that make things sound different. And if you like sound and if you like buttons, just get in there and play. It's so fun. And for the two of us to create music together in a way that was highly technical, yes, but also played to both of our strengths. And then we ended up with this beautiful, like, 4-bar loop was so much fun. We spent like 5 hours making that. And every time we got something right, it just felt like a puzzle piece had clicked into place. It was so satisfying. Whatever dopamine reward system was in both of our brains was just like, here, have some more. And so I get it now. I get it. And it's so powerful to revisit things you used to love, like a hobby of music making, where I started my music journey with classical piano. And it was quite rigid in its structure. And it was very learning, you know, to play classical music. And classical music is beautiful. Listen, I get it. However, it was about replaying these old songs and getting the technical skill right rather than feeling what this piece of music is trying to say. What about this resonance makes you feel something? What feels broad? What feels heavy? What feels light? What feels interesting? And where are things interwoven? And then I learned how to play pop music after that, just like reading guitar tabs with my piano because I didn't have a guitar. And I could start singing songs that I liked. And now I make my own music. And the chords are pretty simple, but the melody, sometimes I hear them in my head and I'm like, oh, this would be so cool if it was this instrument. And now I can do that. So I know that it's really trendy right now, but I think it's a good thing to address your inner child and all the things that they used to love or you used to love and revisit those. And not to say you can't discover something new, but I think the idea of having wonder still in your heart and in your eyes when you were young and very little to else to judge, to sorry, very little else to cloud that judgment makes for a pure and honest love for something. And when you choose to revisit those hobbies, you return to that love. And I think there's something really, really beautiful about that. So for me, it's music and crafting, and I'm learning new skills like Logic Pro and the EQ and what a limiter is and compression. But at the core of it is a love for making sounds, is a love for singing and making music out of that, you know, wry, wretched place in my heart and sometimes soaring place in my heart, and making room for it in the real world. And so I like to call it a little heart song. Now we'll move into part two, which is rest as creative practice. So I am still unlearning the idea that rest has to be earned, as evidenced by the fact that we literally made a whole song. I mean, the thing about that was that it was like genuinely because we loved it. But I saw this video the other day about how often, especially women, feel like they need to do something on their rest days. And even after their rest days, they don't feel well rested. And the argument against giving in to rest is just, well, I'll end up bed rotting all day. And the answer to that is yes, possibly, but the bed rot is actually if you're trying to self-soothe your nervous system somehow. And if you're on your phone, it's a low effort way to self-soothe like that. However, something you could do is actually just take some time to somatically check in. So if you would like, I invite you to maybe lie down the next time you're feeling it, or even right now. And maybe you're lying down already, or sit in your chair if you can and plant your feet on the floor, put your left hand over your heart on your chest and your right hand on your belly, kind of just below your belly button. And you're just going to breathe for three counts into your chest. I can do that with you. So in, two, three, and out, two, three. Just a little something like that. And then you're going to try and breathe into your belly for four. And then we're going to hold and then out for seven. So let's do that together. So in, two, three, four, hold, two, three, four, and out, two, three, four, five, six, seven. And just notice. And then from here, you can then make a decision about whether you want to go back into your phone to scroll, or maybe eat something, draw, read, go for a walk, maybe just lie down on a soft meadow of grass and stare at the sky. That's something you can do as an adult. You're allowed to go try to do that, especially if your schedule allows for it. So realizing that, you know, rest, when you have a to-do list and you need to check things off of it, is not rest. You know, like, you should be doing things because you want to, because you like them, not because you feel like you have to do something productive. And that's, I think, the best way to access genuine rest. And so I definitely felt the impulse to justify this weekend by doing something. And this recording, this specific lighthouse letter, is my personal gentle protest against that. You know, having a full, delightful weekend, but at the end of it, looking back and going, oh, I didn't really do much. Like, I made a song, but whatever. I didn't do anything that made me money. And realizing, like, how messed up that is. It's a weekend. We're here to make money so we can live. But we all deserve to live. And so, I guess, reclaiming that power and being able to live well without a guilt, without shame, to the best of my ability. And that doesn't always mean that I need to have the means to live well. You know, it doesn't mean I need a luxury vacation and a billion massages and a 5-star hotel. Although, I will not say no. But also, many of those luxuries, if I really break them down into the molecules of like, what about a 5-star hotel would I really like? It's like, ugh, it'd be so nice to not have to do the dishes. It'd be so nice to not have to make my own bed. It'd be so nice to, I don't know, get a massage and just relax. And I go, okay, great. So it's just that I don't want to do the labor of housekeeping in the form of dishes and making my own bed. And that I want pressure of some sort on my body, right, to relax. And yes, they're not one-to-one replacements for each other, but like, those things are accessible. If I don't want to do the dishes, I have the means to just order food and not even make dishes, or make food that doesn't have a lot of dishes to wash. I could go out to eat. I could treat myself to a dinner. I could just leave the dishes in the sink and just say, you know what, those are tomorrow's thing. If I didn't want to make the bed, I don't have to make the bed. Or maybe I could set it up so it's a little bit easier to make the bed and, you know, get rid of the extra pillows. It's maybe, oh, someone is having a fun time outside. A meeting of the minds. Wait, let me just go check it out and then I'll report back to you. Oh, this is really cute. There's like 5 pals right outside my building at the front of the building. And they're, I think, doing like a little smoke sesh circle, which is actually really, really cute. I don't think they know that the noise carries right into the apartments, but my window is closed, so I can't hear everything. But I do hear it when they all giggle, which is really cute. Anyway, I'm just, trying to be here and be present and not have to justify that with productivity. I feel like there was a thread before I got distracted by all of these people, but I can't remember what it was. So, I'm reflecting on how being and noticing and enjoying are just enough. And there doesn't need to be any more to it. Sometimes joy and stillness are their own kind of art. And being by myself in the stillness of my apartment is a quiet, beautiful joy. I really, really, really love it. I also, speaking of quiet, beautiful joys, takes me to part 3, which is field notes. This week from a drizzly day, which is awesome. And also Tiny Beautiful Things, my favorite book, which I will talk about in just a second. But I was having a classically rainy day here. And if you know me, I'm pretty weather dependent, mood and weather dependent. On a rainy day, it's really hard for me to be excited about things. And I take a little vitamin D and I sit in front of my little sun lamp and I try to do everything within my power to not let it affect me. And sometimes it still does, you know, it's okay. I'm accepting it. However, this time I needed to go to the store to pick up some things. And so I just decided to be really present. I put on a low stimulating playlist on Spotify and it was full of like Moomin soundtracks, like just the cutest thing, like Stardew Valley soundtracks. And it really added this color and flavor to my little jaunt down the street where I felt like I was the main character or a little adventurer in an RPG. And I was just here to experience things. So I took my time because I was like, there's no rush. I actively tried to go slow. And I noticed the mossy trees, like glowing green. And something about the rain and the way that the light is filtered through on a rainy day makes everything so vibrant. And one of my bingo board goals this year is to touch 100 pieces of moss. And I'm very, very lucky in that there's 2 pieces of moss on my balcony planters now. And they're so, so lovely. But also, touching moss, especially where I live, is like very easy. And it just is a way for me to connect with nature and to force myself to be present through touch. So it's a way I trick myself into being present. However, as part of my touch moss this year, because I'm behind on my goal, I think I've only touched like 12 pieces of moss out of 100. And it's May. It's like the middle of May. No, by the time this comes out, it'll be June. So it's June now. And hopefully I've made up for a lot of my not touching moss time. But I laid my hand on a tree and I probably looked like a crazy person. And I went, you know, I'm not afraid to be seen trying. I'm not afraid to be seen trying to be more present. So let me have this. And I laid my palm against that moss and just breathed into it. And moss is really soft, you know? It's such a good texture. It's not for everybody, but just good moss is, it's like petting a dog with really soft fur. I jumped into the puddles. I saw my reflection in a puddle, which I actually only thought happened in movies or in like really dark pools of water. You know, like really, the lighting kind of has to be perfect for you to see your own reflection in a puddle. And I guess because I was so present and the lighting was perfect, I looked down and I sort of waded into a really big puddle because I had waterproof shoes. And I looked down and I could see the reflection of my face and the sky and the trees. And it was really, really beautiful. And then if I like wiggled my little toe around, the entire reflection would distort. And I was like, wow, how interesting. And then I had the crazy wild thought, not that crazy, but I was like, what if I just jumped in a puddle? Who's going to say no? So I did. And it made the most satisfying splash. And I know that I really sound like Drew Barrymore in that clip of her where she goes, every now and then you got to go out and you got to go dance in the rain. And it's a little cringy, but you know what? She was onto something. Drew gets it. The girls that get it, get it. Sometimes you got to go jump in a puddle, dance in the rain, just touch some moss and be here. Be truly here. Not running from anything. Not avoiding anything, just really be here in the right now. And I'm really learning to love those drizzly days instead of just waiting for the sunshine, and learning that inviting people into my apartment, which is a place I can actually host. I had a really lovely board game afternoon with some new friends and invited to complete strangers into my home. They were friends of friends, so they were safe, don't worry. And we played so many board games and it was so much fun. And if you have never played Teddies versus Monsters, dear listener, dear wayward ship, highly recommend it. It is a fast-paced card game made by a small games company. And essentially you play as either the Teddies or the Monsters, and you're trying to protect or give nightmares to kids who are sleeping, all through creating patterns out of cards. There's attacks you can do on the other team. There's defense you can do for yourself. And it ends up becoming very, very fast paced. And it's a really, really, really fun game. I highly recommend it. Teddies versus Monsters. And that was just such a lovely, lovely afternoon. And that really changed the rainy day, you know? And making music was just such a lovely 180 from what it felt like outside and how I felt like on the inside, to suddenly it looked like crap outside. And I felt actually pretty good. I also want to come back to tiny, beautiful things, which is something that I do talk about on this podcast quite a lot, as evidenced by my field notes. But it's actually a book title. And I might have mentioned this before, but it is one of my favorite books because it's like an anthology of columns from Dear Sugar, which was this woman who, Cheryl Strayed, actually, who did an advice column. And you're like, okay, it's going to be like, what shoes do I wear with this skirt? No, it's like heart pulling things, like really challenging, scary things sometimes. I just went and I read a few of them. And one of them that I read that was super poignant that night was about a father who had lost his son. And in his beautiful letter, he wrote with such beauty of grief and loss. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was that he said, I can't even write a letter, so I'm going to write you a list instead. And Cheryl Strayed, Sugar, wrote back with also a list. And she went, one of his questions was, how do I go on? And she said, I don't know how you do. I just know that you must. And you will. And if you've never, ever read Tiny Beautiful Things, please go read it. It's not a long read. You don't have to read all of it. But I think this specific story is from a chapter called The Obliterated Place. And it was so beautiful. And there's always something in there that just reaches me in a different way of how we can live and how we can show up for each other and ourselves and be good, sort of honest humans that way. So in closing, you don't have to make anything to matter. You know, you don't even have to participate in the act of creation, even though I've talked a lot about it, but just, you could just exist. You could just smell the rain. You just take a deep breath into your heart and into your belly. You don't have to make anything to matter. But if you do create, do it for yourself. Do it for that little kid that had wonder before they'd experienced too much of life, before things got heavy, capital H. Do it for that pure love of, wow, I'm alive and this thing is something I can do. Do it gently. Revisit something from your childhood, even if it's just humming a tune, maybe it's a TV program, maybe it's a craft that you did, and just explore, approach it with curiosity. And if it feels a little cringy to do a thing that's meant for kids, like, listen, I'm not gonna judge you. I'm not gonna yuck your yum. This lighthouse is non-judgmental. I invite you, and if you feel like you need permission, I'm giving it to you. Revisit something from your childhood. Go play. Let the puddles count as progress. Let the softness count as strength. If you've ever seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, Wayman kind of got it. That kindness is strength. That softness is bravery. And let it be enough. And so tonight, as always, sleep well. Drink lots and lots and lots of water, and tell the people you love them. The lighthouse is lit for you. Good night.